7 minutes past 6. Hello and welcome to Sports Day. Sam McClure with you tonight. Jared Healy has stumbled at the final hurdle. He has decided to take the day off. The voice of racing in this town, Andrew Bensley, will co-host with me. And it's apt that AB is here, for it is not just Grand Final Eve. It is Cox Plate Eve, also known as Manikato Stakes Day. And tomorrow will be the 100th running of the famous Cox Plate in front of a silent Moonee Valley. It is going to be a strange day in Melbourne tomorrow. Swan Street would usually be a carnival atmosphere and now a ghost town. The MCG will be eerily empty and Moonee Valley the same. And this now from the Bureau. Severe weather will lash Melbourne tonight. Expect thunderstorms, strong winds and heavy rain with the chance of flash flooding only in the strangest of COVID years of 2020. Instead of the calm before the storm, it's the storm before the calm. AB, welcome.
Yes, good evening to you, Sam. If that Weather Bureau's forecast is right, what a day we've got in Melbourne, particularly for Cox Plate Day. But
yeah,
gee.
That changes a lot of things for tomorrow,
it does,
AB.
It does. It'll affect if, look, they've got a meeting on tonight. They're hoping that they can get through the Manikato meeting tonight.
But if they have a severe storm there tonight, it puts those races in doubt as well.
Well, particularly affecting the track condition for tomorrow, they'd prefer to have no rain tonight and then let the rain happen through the middle of the night and then stop hopefully mid-morning like the Weather Bureau is saying. But obviously won't affect the crowd. There's been much to say about the crowd issue when that announcement came through earlier in the week. But tomorrow, and I think that the racing industry should be standing very proud. They are a sport that has kept going through everything that we as a community have been through. So many people travelling all around Victoria, jockeys, trainers, participants, strappers, they all do the COVID tests over and over and over. I look at it on the TV and think, I don't want to go through that.
Yep.
You know, they've been doing it for many, many months, and for them to be able to get us into a spring with international horses coming here as well, the racing industry for mine, I know I'm a lover and work within it, but I think that they should be very, very proud of what they've been able to do.
And like the AFL, AB, they've given something for us to talk about and think about and watch on the weekends. I mean, imagine the last 6 months had there not been football and racing.
Exactly. I mean, while we've been able to have the football on interstate, wherever it's been, it's given us in as Victorians something to watch out for.
Yep.
And something to place a bet on or just enjoy it. It was interesting this week, just on that, from Racing Victoria, their financial report came out. The last 6 months of wagering on racing has been up anywhere, up on previous year, 50%.
That's huge.
It's given so many people something to be interested in from a local point of view.
13 13 32, if you'd like to join us on the Harcourts open line and even just give us an indication, we've got a round for two at Club Mandalay. Golf courses have reopened.
Yes, they have.
You're within 25 kilometres of the beautiful Club Mandalay. And by the way, hopefully the 25Ks is abolished soon.
Sunday.
Give us a call. 13 don't preempt it. Save your crystal ball for the Cox Plate, please. I'm done preempting Daniel Andrews' press conference. 13 13 32, if you'd just like to tell us how you're planning tomorrow. I still have no idea what my game plan going into tomorrow is. Am I really just staying and watching everything from race one all the way through to the final seconds of the grand final?
Yeah, of
I mean,
course
you are. Well, that's 10 hours of sport.
But what are you going to do?
I'm going to need some sort of breather,
AB. What else are you going to do?
I need a break. 13, 13, 32, if you've got any game plan thoughts. It's a big hour coming up. We're going to speak to Nick Williams, of course, a six-time winner of the Melbourne Cup, yet to win the Cox Plate, though, and made some interesting comments earlier in the week about Buckhurst, AB. And also, we're going to cross live to England to speak to Roger Charlton.
Roger Charlton is a leading UK trainer. He sent a horse called Aspitar, who, for mine, is a double-figure odds and well over the odds.
You love this horse tomorrow.
I don't know whether I'm going to put it in the top three, but I'm going to have something on it. Anyway, we'll talk to Roger Charlton a little while later in this hour.
And so many of the internationals, I mean, this time, 2 months ago, AB, were we thinking, how are we going to have a Cox Plate and a Melbourne Cup, which is so reliant on its great internationals? That's nothing against the locals. They have a rich history in these races. But it makes the race days and the carnival better when we attract the best.
Well, it's grown. Many people have pull up the argument, why do we do it? But it has now made the Melbourne Spring what it is. And I will say, just on the international trainers that have come, their horses, the horses don't get COVID, so they were able to travel. But let's just say the Aidan and Joseph O'Brien stables and then the others like Roger Charlton, they had to send staff to Sydney to arrive there and do 14 days of self-isolation, jump in a car and drive to Victoria.
Crazy.
To get through all this. So many people have done so much for this to happen.
But we are going to start plenty coming up in racing this hour with the grand final. It just seems crazy to me, AB, and I live in the heart of Richmond, so, you know, wandering down Swan Street today, on what would usually be, there'd be people pouring out of the Richmond Club Hotel, the corner, wearing yellow and black. There'd be Geelong fans baiting the Richmond fans, and that would go all the way until the first bounce tomorrow. It's such a good place to be around this city when it's grand final, but eerily silent the MCG will be tomorrow. And a man that has a rich history at the Richmond Footy Club, a 100-gamer for them, played in that elimination final in 2013 against Carlton, and I'm sure still a keen watcher of them, is Jake King. Jake, welcome to you. What an unbelievable run this club is having at the moment, and they could write themselves into further history books tomorrow. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you, boys, and thanks for having me. It's always good to have a chat. It's very, very interesting. I actually seen Brendan Gale's interview come up when he spoke, I think it was on Footy Classified, maybe.
10 years ago.
About his plan and what he was wanting and what he was expecting. And everyone thought he was a madman. And now we look back now and we think he's an absolute genius. But what the club's actually done and over the last, let's say, 7-8 years, and it's just been absolutely amazing. And win, lose, or draw, hats off to them, especially to both teams, actually, for the way that the years panned out. But you know what? It's going to be an interesting day, an interesting game, and hopefully Koch is the first captain to captain them through three flags.
So, Jake, just on that, it's interesting that you raised those comments. You only played in 8 wins in your first 40 games, and now that would have coincided around the time that Brendan Gale made those comments. When he said them, I don't know if you remember when he said them at the time, did you think he was a madman as well? Or did you actually think that, hang on, I know we're losing and I know we are a bit of the butt of the joke of the competition, but I can actually see we're not as far away as people think.
I'm going to say this in the nicest way, and I hope this isn't the wrong, I hope I'm allowed to say this, but we thought he was that shit crazy, right? As a player, like, you hear him come out and say all of it, it almost felt like we just had the world put on our shoulders and the pressure, like, internal now as well as external. And when you're at a footy club, you try and keep the external noise away and not let it interfere. And you're 100% right, mate. My first 3 years of football, we were struggling to win games of football, and it was very tough. And Dimmer jumped on board, and then Blair Hartley had his game plan and come into the club, and he had his players that he wanted, whether or not we needed them at the time. It's what he wanted and what he wanted to set up. Smacker, Brendan got us out of the $6 million debt that we were in. We always knew we had the supporter base, always knew that. So we could win 20 games in a row, and our supporters, if we lose that 21 games, mate, we hear about it. So they are diehard supporters all the way through. And as you know, when you start to win games of football, good things happen. The supporters started coming back. The memberships went up. And I still remember, in 2016, I remember that a lot of people said that Dimmer's head was on a chopping block, and he was in the firing line and questions were asked. And I remember sitting there watching and seeing everything start to unfold. And for the first time in 2016, I think it was about round 10 or 11, halfway through, as a past player being just out of the game, you could see it all start to unfold and you could see everything start to happen. And then the belief that the boys had in Dimmer, and it's not, like, you do play for the jumper, you play for your club, your coach and everything, but when Dimmer started copping the outside criticism and then getting questioned by the board, I think that's when the players actually lifted and turned and went to another level, and they're not going to have their leader be thrown under a bus. And I think that's when I felt the whole club shifted and the whole playing group started to become one rather than individuals. And obviously 2017, I've said it to one of my best mates, Cameron. I said to him that they were going to win this flag. I think it was about round 14. I said, we've got this. And I truly believed it. And I'm not just saying it. And, you know, the belief amongst that playing group at the moment over the last 3 to 4 years is unstoppable. And it reminds me of Hawthorn, what they did when Clarko got them going with their three flags, 2000, I think it was 7, 8, 9, 10, whenever it was. And, mate, they were a dominant powerhouse club, and you look at them and they were bullies at the time, and Richmond's getting labelled some of their players as bullies and they're winning games, and I think it's absolutely amazing. And hats off to Dimmer, Blair Hartley and Brendan Gale for everything that they've done.
Jake, you mentioned, you know, the build-up of a team. You know, they've had some issues along the way this year, but they've been solid. They're in a grand final. That belief of knowing that you can do it must impact tomorrow night's game, you would feel, in their confidence, and just a little bit of a query in Geelong's minds.
Definitely. Well, I can openly say, boys, I went into the Port, into the week when we were playing Port last week, and my words were, if we play the way we've been playing over the last 3 or 4 weeks, we lose against Port Adelaide, because I feel like we hadn't got it together. Yes, we keep moving the ball forward. Yes, we keep knocking it on and keep surging. But I honestly felt like we were wasting the ball going inside 50. The inside 50 counts. We were getting it in there. And I reckon we were scoring maybe 1 out of 7 times if we were lucky. So I didn't think that they would get over the line against Port playing to the standard that they were. But I guess when after the game I'm sitting there watching and you look and you go, well, okay, we made Port play to our standard. Mm. Perceived pressure was unbelievable because the boys have been so amazing, so good with their pressure over the last 3 years. I think Port didn't realise how much time they had when they had the ball occasionally, and then they just bombed it and Surge kicked the football and they actually panicked.
Yeah,
and that's due to years of actual pressure, years of consistency, years of like the hard work they've put into the actual club and every player over the last, I reckon, 4 or 5 years. So I think that within itself and the mind games with football, as you know, finals time comes, the pressure goes to a new level. I think Richmond have adapted so well that when they don't get their hands on the ball, they still put the pressure on and they have their opposition looking over their shoulder. And I'm not sure if you guys know the numbers what, but I think most of the KPIs over the last 4 weeks, we haven't actually done all that well. I think if you go through every quarter and you added them all up, we would have lost more quarters with all the KPIs than we would have won.
Mm-hmm.
And for the boys to actually win the game on the back of that, it's just years of like effort and years of belief putting into one another. So going into this game, I honestly believe that if our boys can string this one game together where they all play as a team and they continue to do the hard work knowing that they are just about there, they've still got so much more room to improve. And I hope it comes out tomorrow night. And in saying that, Geelong are in the peak of their the peak of the year at the moment. They're the team to beat, I honestly believe. So I think it's going to be a cracking game.
Jake, great to have you on. You are blood, sweat and tears for this footy club. Good luck watching tomorrow night. Go Tigers.
No, thanks, boy. Thanks for having me always.
Jake King there, 107 games for the Tigers.
I reckon he could nearly run out for them tomorrow night. He's that pumped.
If not, he could be Damien Hardwick speechwriter, I reckon.
He could be.
I get pumped up just listening to him. This is Sports Day. Don't go anywhere. Nick Williams, Buckhurst running tomorrow. Well, finally got a run. We're going to chat to the man behind that horse and see how he's feeling going into tomorrow. Welcome back to Sports 8. It's powered by 100% Australian electricity and gas retailer. That's Ren Energy. You can make the switch today. Tomorrow, not only grand final day or grand final night, but also, Andrew Bensley, the 100th running of the Cox Plate.
Yes, 4:15, all to fit around the 7 network. They'll have the races in the afternoon, then the Cox Plate, and then in straight into
it's Christmas for Channel 7 tomorrow.
It's Christmas for us just to be able to watch it. That's true. Nick Williams is in the ownership of Buckhurst with his father, Lloyd, Mum as well. Nick, good morning. Good afternoon.
We're about to go to England, so good morning makes sense.
I was getting used to Roger Charlton. How are you, mate?
I think it's good morning, Andrew. Good afternoon. You've got me confused. I don't know what time of the day it is anywhere.
Hang on. We'll just
Where
do
are
it.
We? What?
We'll just do it again. We're not on air, I don't think. No, we are.
No, we are.
Look, now,
I'm a victim of this pandemic.
Yeah, no, exactly. Now, the biggest question to you, who wins the footy?
Well, it's funny you say that. I hate to say it, but I think that Richmond will probably win in a canter, but I'd love to see Geelong win. And I tell you, I'd love to see them win with Gary Ablett kicking a goal over after the siren to get them over the line. I think that'd be a fitting farewell for a fella who's going to be remembered as one of the greats. So,
Is that a Hawthorn lover barracking for Geelong to win a flag?
You know what? Well, you know what, we've achieved so much as Hawthorn supporters in my lifetime anyway, and you know, I feel sorry for the Geelong supporters because they've been great underachievers. So I'd love to see them win again.
I think we better straighten up and talk horses here. Earlier in the week, bit annoyance that Buckhurst wasn't there, but Magic One comes out earlier today with an injury, and Buckhurst is now there. How's the stable confidence?
Stable confidence is actually pretty high. They've been very happy with the horse. He certainly came out of last week well. He probably just didn't get the mile and a half. Sticky track probably didn't suit him. But they're very happy with him. We've been monitoring closely all week in case the call-up came, and we're hopeful.
I think Ben Mellum may have got off last week and just felt, I think, that 2,000 would suit the horse. Was that part of it, to back up and run it this week? I know things have changed during the week.
Yeah, they have. Well, that's, we always had him in this race, obviously. You know, we didn't have to pay a late entry fee or anything. And, he was in this race. We'd been actually talking about this race for him with Joseph for 12 months. Ultimately we thought that we were best to kick off it through the Caulfield Cup. He ran well in the Caulfield Cup, albeit he just doesn't see out the 2400, and particularly on that testing track last week. I'm sitting here, I suppose, in the old days I used to watch the Grand Final marathon on the night before Grand Final day, and tonight I'll be watching the weather radar, hoping that not too much rain hits Moonee Valley. I see they've got a few showers there at the moment, but it's it doesn't look too bad, and hopefully we'll get a good surface tomorrow. Look, it's the greatest 2 minutes of sport in Australia, and tomorrow will be no exception, and there'll be a worthy winner. And I've just got my fingers and toes crossed that it might be us, but whoever it'll be, will go down in the history as a great Cox Plate winner.
Nick, the Bureau is suggesting severe weather tonight. As an owner, what does that do to the way you see the race and how it pans out tomorrow?
Well, what it does is, based on what the Weather Bureau have been predicting for about the last 3 months, it makes you want to put a pair of shorts and a T-shirt on because it's going to be hot and sunny. our horse would not be suited if the track got into the heavy range. It's as simple as that. And forgetting our horse for 1 minute, I don't think it makes for a great day of racing if you're on a heavy 9 or a heavy 10. Mm. I'm hoping for Moonee Valley's sake that they if we get a bit of rain, it might get to a 5 or a 6 or something, and that's a fair track for all. So that'd be good for them. But I'd just love them to have a really good day of racing. And we've had such a trying year on all fronts. Not obviously, racing's kept going, and it's given all of us a bit of interest while we've been stuck in our houses for so long. Thank God for sport. So I'm just hoping they can have a great day.
I've got to ask you about another horse that's running there tomorrow at the Valley for our listeners, a horse called Homesman. who has been a stable sort of regular star over a few years, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. He has. He's a beauty. You know, he's won the Group 1 Underwood for us. I think if you ask Ben Mellum tonight, he should have won the Caulfield Cup for us.
Yeah.
I forced Benny to ride probably half a kilo too light. I should have said to him, you can ride him half a kilo over, because in the last 50 metres, he literally nearly fell off. He was so exhausted. But, you know, and if he had been half over, I have no doubt he would have won. But anyway, these things happen. He's been a grand horse for us. He's first up tomorrow. Anthony Friedman seems to think he's going okay. You know, I haven't had the opportunity of seeing him, so I just don't know is the truth of it. You know, if he gets there in anything like his best form that he's run first up previously, he'll just win. But whether he's in that form, I don't know.
Nick, you said it was going to be the greatest 2 minutes of Australian sport tomorrow. Hopefully it's the greatest 10 hours of Australian sport from race one all the way through to the last quarter. Thanks for coming on. Enjoy tomorrow, wherever you're watching.
No, and to all your punters the same, it's going to be a great day of sport tomorrow. It's fantastic, and good on you guys for all the work you put in covering it all. It's terrific.
Good on you, Nick. Well spoken.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Quick sports update for Tyre Power, keeping the Australian public safe on the roads in difficult times. TyrePower.com.au. Sam McClure and Andrew Bensley with you. Just repeating, no change to either Richmond or Geelong going into tomorrow night's grand final. So both teams at full strength. It is going to be a fascinating contest. We are soon going to go to England to chat with Roger Charlton, trainer of Aspetar in the Cox Plate tomorrow, a French horse being trained in England. But AB, while we are on the topic of the grand final,
yep,
we might get your tip. I know that you're going to give us your real crystal ball for the Cox Plate soon.
I'm a bit like Nick. I'd really like Geelong to win because I like new premiership people.
Because you don't want Richmond to win.
Richmond, the only thing that makes me hesitant about Geelong winning is that I think what I said to Jake, I think Richmond know how to win it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Geelong don't, but Richmond have been there and they've got the players. You just see moments last week against Adelaide. You know, Port Adelaide, under pressure, kept kicking the ball to Toby Nankervis in that last quarter. They put enormous pressure on teams, and a couple of, in that second last round game, and I know it's a different sort of makeup tomorrow, but Geelong couldn't score. They had one goal to half time. I just hope that doesn't happen tomorrow.
And I did mention last night with Jared that Jai Caldwell was on a 5-year deal at $550,000 a year at Essendon. I had a couple of serious phone calls directed my way today. Reliably informed that is wrong. It's a 4-year deal, not a 5-year deal, and significantly less than $550,000 a year. So if I get them wrong, I'll put my hand up and we'll see how that transpires. This is Sports Day. We're going to go to England next.
Welcome back to Sports Day. It's for the all-new game-changing Kia Sorento, which has landed. You can find out more at kia.com.au. Shortly going to go to England to catch up with Roger Charlton, who is the manager of Aspetar in the Cox Plate tomorrow. It is, hopefully, if the rain stays away, although it doesn't look good, Manukato Stakes Night, of course. That's at 8:45, where the James Cumming train trekking AB is the favourite.
Coming through the Everest from last Saturday, so obviously has come through that well. I just looked at the radar. It's only that white-blue on the radar coming through Melbourne, so it's only light.
We start predicting Melbourne weather, and as soon as we say it's not going to rain, it melts.
No, all I'll say is that the harder stuff appears to be going lower under Melbourne. That's right now, but the Bureau is still saying, and Roger Charlton may be hearing this right now, but as I say, good morning to you, your time in England. Roger, the Weather Bureau suggesting that we're going to get one hell of a night of rain here, but then clearing sort of tomorrow morning our time, so we're sweating on it a bit here.
Yeah, it's not going to suit some horses, but I don't think it's going to worry us. In fact, I always thought he wanted soft ground, so I'm pleased to hear that. I guess the track gets a bit chopped up, and will they move the rail out, or will they stay where they are?
No, my understanding is they're going to leave it where it is. They're just about to run a race, the fourth race, as we speak. So they're halfway through the card, and not a lot of rain has fallen there. So I think I think we'll get through tonight. Tonight's meeting, it'll be what happens through the night with the rain. On just on that point with Aspetar, it's run obviously very good on firm grounds, but you're not hesitant if it is soft tomorrow.
No, early on in his life, I always thought he needed it, and we were very cautious about running him on fast ground. When he won his Group 1 in Cologne, Cologne traditionally at that time of the year is always soft and heavy, and we travelled 3 days to get there and found it was good to firm. So we ran, and he won. But, you know, the soft ground wouldn't worry me, no.
Roger, you look at international ratings for people that are not racing followers all year round, but there are ratings on all horses around the world. And Aspetar, there's been a lot made about Armoury, but Aspetar at his best is not far behind.
No, we use time form ratings here, and they rate your horses as well. I don't know how accurate they are, but they're a pretty well-known organization. And I think Russian Camelot comes out in 126, Armorer comes out 124, same as us.
So does that tell us if he turns up at his best tomorrow that he'll be in the finish? Are you confident?
Well, at the moment, he seems to be 3, 4, 5, 6, about 7th in the betting. According to the screen I've got in front of me, he's 14-1.
Yep.
I'm surprised he's not a little shorter, to be honest with you. He ran arguably his best race ever last time out. And I know we're coming off a 12, 13-week break, but he won a Group 1 off a 12-week break. He's a light-framed, active little horse. I don't believe he needs, you know, heavy preparation. He seems to be in good form. I mean, we know these overseas ventures are... We have to trust that the horse has acclimatized and adjusted, and it's challenging. It's not easy. He spent 2 weeks in Newmarket doing quarantine, having left my place, and then, you know, a 30-hour journey and, you know, totally different environment. It's not easy on these horses, but we're here and nearly ready to go.
100th running of the Cox Plate, so it's a significant history race tomorrow. Your son Tom works for John O'Shea in Sydney. Was he the instigator of all this?
Yeah, he certainly was. You know, we were going to look to travel this horse wherever there was prize money. And the way things are in Europe at the moment, races in Germany and in the UK, the prize money has been reduced. And obviously the Cox Plate is an incredibly attractive prize. The horse has travelled well before, and it was his idea to do it. We had a few hoops to go through and a few moments when we thought nothing was going to go right for us, but he kept on encouraging us, and he was very helpful in securing Damien Lane, who I think is good booking, very good booking. He actually came and rode out for me one summer when he had a few weeks in the UK, and I gave him, I think, his first ride in the Melbourne Cup on Quest for More in 2015.
Roger, great to have you on. I know it's early in the morning there. AB and I both like the chances of Aspetar.
Over the odds.
Tomorrow,
over the odds.
So good luck.
All right, thank you very much. Bye.
Roger Charlton there, trainer of Aspetar, French horse trained in England. It's going to be interesting to see. And there you go. So he's probably hoping for a little bit of rain.
Well, I'm just starting to... I've got to put him in some sort of order here.
Well, you have to, because when we come back after this...
Really?
I'm going to ask you to give 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Well, geez, I'm going to have to include Aspetar somewhere. Anyway, let me just...
Well, you can't leave it out after the pump up that the trainer just gave it.
I've got 7 other names on my list here.
Okay, well, get that pen out. This is Sports Day. When we come back, AB gives us the crystal ball predictions. Welcome back to Sports Day. It's all for Kia and Red Energy. Well, the time has come. Geez, I've promised a bit here.
Yes, you have.
I said that Andrew Bensley would not only give you the winner of the Cox Plate, which is running at 4:15 tomorrow, a few hours before the grand final, but he's also going to tell you who is going to run second, third, and fourth. It's a fascinating race this year. It is every year, but there is so many different talking points about the Cox Plate, particularly when you talk about the run-in and the lead-in for Russian Camelot versus Arcadia Queen, the internationals, and how they're going to fare. AB, What have you made of the build-up to it, and what kind of race do you think it's going to be run as?
Well, I think the build-up has been fantastic because we've got the internationals. Probably 2 or 3 months ago, Sam, we were thinking we're not going to get any of these horses to come. But
it's a big part of our spring, really.
Well, we've built into it over the years since Dermot Weld first came back in the 80s. You know, it's grown each year. So I think Aidan O'Brien, although he lost Magic Wand earlier today due to injury, I think that the quality that Aidan O'Brien has sent particularly, and Joseph O'Brien not far behind, and Roger Charlton with Aspitar. I think the quality is certainly there from an international point of view. We're talking about high quality horses. Aidan O'Brien's horse Armory has run against some of the best horses in Europe right now. That's also been the case with Aspitar. So I think both of those horses are of world quality. Sir Dragonet, who's now joined Kiramar and David Eustace, isn't far behind. But then you look at the locals, you look at, well, I'll rate Probabil, who's owned out of New Zealand, obviously, but we've seen her race in Sydney during the spring. I think that she's beautifully drawn to get an ideal run from Barrier 2.
And so consistent.
Yeah, she has been. And I think what Kieran McAvoy showed when the horse won the Epsom at her last run in Sydney was she's got early tactical speed that will plonk her right on the pace tomorrow, and then she relaxes. I think that from a local point of view, I think that Arcadia Queen and Russian Camelot, there's not a lot between them. It could simply come down to where Russian Camelot gets to from that wide draw. What does Ollie do? You know, we've got to monitor the overnight weather. You know, I'm not going to balk at giving you some tips, but the weather could in fact play an impact if we get a lot of rain tonight. From a pace point of view, well, Grand Slam is there. The only three-year-old, much debate during the week on whether the horse deserves to be there. Kieran Maher, the co-trainer, has been very buoyant about the way the horse will run tomorrow from its draw, that it'll lead for a long way. Now that Magic Wand isn't there, there's not a lot of other horses that will go with Grand Slam now for early pace. So
you don't think there's going to be a lot of pace in the race?
I don't reckon there is.
Because that suited, I reckon, or do you think it suited Arcadia Queen against Camelot? I know it was a much smaller field, completely different race, but able to sit back and then launch in the last 400.
Yeah, I think Arcadia Queen is in a perfect or ideal spot to get that similar run.
Right.
It's what Ollie does. I'm not ruling out, like, Ollie and Russian Camelot have been able to send, you know, the only negative about Russian Camelot going forward tomorrow from the wide draw is that then he's got an issue that he can get revved up. And then it's hard to settle him.
All right, AB, come on. You've teased us enough now. You've given us a five. Give us the order.
Oh, gee, if only Jared Healy was here so I could. He really beats me up and gives me some confidence. Come on, Sam. You can give me a bit more than that, can't you?
Well, you've been the guy that picks all the winners in the big races since we've started following this sport. So come on.
I'm going
to
go.
We don't need to pump up the greats. No. The greats don't need to be pumped up.
I'm going to go with Probabil. The Epsom winner for Jamie Richards and Kieran McAvoy. Kieran's had 11 rides. He's 12th tomorrow in the Cox Plate. Hasn't quite been able to celebrate, but I think he will tomorrow with Probabil. Mm-hmm. From that draw with the weight of 55.5, positions beautifully, handles the sting out of the track, although I don't want it too wet, but I think Probabil wins. I think that Armory, the international quality of Aidan O'Brien and Armory, we know the horses had that issue with a vet's test in the last 24, 36 hours.
Yep.
But now, having got that tick, Armory is there. Arcadia Queen, Russian Camelot, there's not a lot between those. And the other one is Aspitar. I'm certainly going to say I'm going to have something each way on Aspitar. I think it's well over the odds, at double figure odds. Damien Lane won this race last year, and it will position up in that sort of fourth, fifth or sixth there somewhere. So they're the five, but the main three, Probabil to beat Armory and then Arcadia Queen.
Well, we didn't put you under any pressure, I didn't think, AB, as we come up to the 7 o'clock news. Well, how are you feeling at 4:15, 4:16 tomorrow.
Well, I'll get a bit toey about 4:10, but I've got confidence in Probabile. I think that she's going to be the winner of the Cox Plate. I will say there's a two-year-old that will win the first race tomorrow, the second race tomorrow, the English Banner.
Oh, the English. Okay.
Yeah, we're going to mention a horse called Tempest Charm, race 2, number 15, for Robbie Griffiths and Mac de Kock, who's the son of the champion South African trainer, Mike de Kock. They've set up a partnership this week. From what I'm hearing, the filly is all ready to go. Race 2, number 15. And I reckon Mike Maroney can win race 8, the Moonee Valley Gold Cup, with a horse called Sound. So they're the extra ones for us for tomorrow. Race 2, number 15, and race 8, number 7. But I'll be the one wearing the mask if Probabile doesn't win tomorrow.
I tell you what, either way, you've had such a strong air. I'm not sure, Jared, just an absolute automatic selection pack for Monday. Actually, don't say that because he'll be listening. AB, great to have you on.
No, good
enjoy
on you.
Enjoy Cox Plate Day.
We will.
And
it'll
the
be
grand final.
A great day of sport.
Absolutely.
Just everyone enjoy it.
It's coming up to 7 o'clock. Enjoy the weekend. 7 minutes past 7. Welcome to Sports 8. It's all for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. It is a big hour coming up. It's Sam McClure and Andrew Bensley with you. That man, Andrew Bensley, is going to tell you who is not only going to win, but who's going to run second, third, and fourth in the Cox Plate. We're going to do that very shortly. We're also going to hear, it's obviously the first time that it's not only Cox Plate Day, one of the biggest race days in this country, probably the second biggest day behind Cup Day. Anyway, I digress. One of the biggest days of sport in this country tomorrow. It's been combined with the AFL. We're going to hear from Chris Scott and Damien Hardwick, the Geelong coach and the Richmond coach, as well as the captains who did a press conference today. And we'll also replay some fascinating interviews with not only Dave Matthews from GWS, but also Ben Buckley, the chairman of North Melbourne, with Jared and myself from yesterday. But before we do that, AB,
yep,
there is a man who tomorrow, not only is it grand final day for him, but it is a curtain call for Terry Wallace after 43 years in the VFL AFL, 254 games played, 247 games coached, 3 flags, 4 best and fairest. I shudder to think, Plough, as we welcome you, how many games you've actually commentated on. I know that you watch all 9 every weekend. I'm not sure if we've got a tally of how many you've been a part of as the media. Welcome to you, Plough.
Thanks very much, Sam and Andrew, and to all your listeners, because I spent a long time sort of in this regional platform speaking to all your listeners. So, hello and a goodbye all at once.
Hey, Plough, you've always had a really unique lens on the game. Just start by explaining to our listeners who love hearing you why it is you've chosen this year for it to be the last. You've been involved, as you said at the start, in the game for a very, very long time.
Yeah, well, it goes actually back 2 years ago. I had always worked with both Croc Media, AFL Nation, and for that matter, SEN, on one-year contracts. So I never really was one to worry about trying to get a long-term contract or anything like that. So I just worked on 1 year at a time, and I made up my mind that there was a few other things I wanted to do in life. I still wanted to go out with relevancy in the industry. And to be perfectly frank, I was sort of getting to the stage where, you know, I'd had enough of my own opinions, so I thought it was time. There was a new brigade of young, recently retired people coming through. And, you know, I speak about Jordan Lewis, I speak about Nick Del Santo, and a whole host of guys coming through. And I just sort of thought, you know what, it's about time, that it's their time, and time for, the older generation to wander off and do a few other things. And, you know, look, I've got a few other things I had in mind, a couple of them, obviously, with the COVID times have been put back a little bit. But once I'd had my head around speaking to the respective companies and saying, let's lock on a 2 year, you know what you're doing in 2 years' time, I know what I'm doing in 2 years' time. And I sort of had a finish line that I could go as hard as what I could towards that finish line, and that's the way it's played out.
Well, it sounds very encouraging for a great day tomorrow, but I want to reminisce a little bit just on the art of football.
Mm.
You played, obviously, back in the 70s, 80s, when I was just a kid barracking for Collingwood, and Terry Wallace had used to burst through the packs and ruin our chances of winning a game or two. How different has football improved, or do you think the way that football is being played right now is ugly?
Well, I'll start it by sort of saying if you put the players of today up against the players of yesteryear, the players of today would slaughter them. What has changed is the manner in which the game is played. So if the players of today were allowed to play in the style of football that the players of yesteryear were, we've got blokes who, you know, are now playing, you know, call it in the old-fashioned centre position,
yep,
that would have been rucks or centre forwards, and you know, big, powerful rucks and centre forwards in past eras. So I have no doubt about, you know, the standard and the ability of the players, but the game is completely different. I mean, we went from a positional game to a game that, you know, is virtually just a transition style of football. We went from genuine one-on-one contest where you kicked it down a line and you had a contest between two players. Well, that's pretty much out the door now. So for those that grew up in the, you know, well, in our era, I suppose, Andrew, they see the game as being inferior, but I still sit back there and I suppose I was part and parcel of the coaching brigade that started full-time and had our players full-time back in around the, you know, 1998 to 2001. That was about when that whole change occurred, and we started looking at transition sports. We started looking at the way that, you know, soccer set up. We started looking at you know, hockey and other games, basketball clearly, and taking bits and pieces out of all of those games. And what we do have now is we have it's almost a different sport to what it was back in those days. But yeah, I still love it either way. And if you're a 10-year-old kid growing up with it today, this is all you know.
Yep.
As you were 10-year-old kid growing up with it yesteryear.
Yeah.
So, Plough, talk us through what you think's going to unfold tomorrow. You're covering the game for AFL Nation. Your crystal ball has been as accurate as anyone else's, more accurate as anyone's in the last decade. It's a fascinating game. Two teams that play pretty differently and have had very different seasons.
Yeah, for those who like Get Smart, it is chaos versus control. And I know a few people have used that line. It really does sort of play out for them. I will say one thing. Geelong are in better form at the moment over the last 3 weeks than Richmond. That's to me, that's unquestionable what that is the case.
Yep.
You can go back to last week, inside 50 tallies, there was 33 difference between them. Geelong were plus 18, Tigers were minus 15, but still found a way to win. You look at their percentage over their three finals, Tigers come in at 113, Geelong come in at 169. You know, it's a big margin, the variance between the two. So Cats are in better form. But that doesn't necessarily mean they win. You know, it's on the day. It's how you readjust, how you adjust yourself. It is that Richmond have had the wood over Geelong for a period of time. So what I'll do, guys, is I'll just give a bit of a rundown of what the Cats need to do to win and what the Tigers need to do to win. So from my point of view, what the Cats, if I was saying to the Cats what they needed to do, it's just keep doing what you've been doing over the last few weeks, because they've been, one, controlling game through marks. They've had ground control through marks, through pushing the ball up their end of the ground at high inside 50 numbers versus their opposition. You know, they've dominated that 50-32, 46-30 the last couple of weeks, and their marks inside 50 have been really, really strong because of that. And then the other thing from a Cats point of view is the clearances, which they've been really good. They've trusted their midfielders to get the job done and play Dangerfield up forward to make them a bit more dangerous. And that is really important. Their clearances are really important to their ground control. So they play that ground control type of game. So that's what they need to do. Flip that around to the Tigers, chaos. Their chaos game is through pressure and putting real pressure on the ball carrier. So we're not talking about necessarily how many tackles they've had versus the opposition. It's closing down time and space. It's not allowing the Geelong guys to be able to just chip the ball around like they want to, because they're under, or it's either perceived pressure or they are under intense pressure. The chaos then goes to that they are really tight structurally behind the ball. So they're putting pressure on the footy, and then behind the ball, where the footy wants to go, they structure up really, really well in that period. The other thing that they do really well is their back line is almost impassable. So sometimes teams will get it through with that pressure on, and they'll get it up there, and they'll have the even amount of inside 50s to what Richmond get, but they can't score when they get it inside because of the backline structure and because of the pressure up the ground. Last week it was Port Adelaide, 17% only. I know it was wet conditions, but Richmond still went at 36. The last time Geelong played against them, it was 28-52. So they get it where they can score at their end of the ground with fast play, but they slow up the opposition so the opposition can't get through when it's at their end. So that's the way that Richmond want to play. And when they win it back, it's a charge of the Light Brigade. It's tidal wave running, tap it on, kick it off the ground and play it that way. So that just tries to give you a feel of the two ways that the two sides will go about playing this game.
So does the round 17 clash where Richmond won by over four goals mean anything? Given that Geelong on that occasion had three or four of their seniors not playing?
Don't think it means much at all. I mean, Richmond had exactly the same. You know, they had some of the likes of Edward, Prestia, and these sort of guys not playing as well. But when you have a look at it, the main statistic from that game, I know Geelong were on one goal at three-quarter time, so the probably end score flattered them to a degree. But the main statistic that came out of the game was inside 50 efficiency. And this is what I'm saying about Geelong. They'll get it up there. They'll get looks, but they've got to be able to score from the looks. When you have a look at it, the last time they played, Gary Rowan didn't play. The last time they played, Ablett didn't play. Last time they played, Dangerfield was in the midfield, not forward. The forward structure will look completely different this time around to what it looked the last time that the two met up. So, as I said, I think it's a really even matchup. When I have a look at Richmond, I picked them in both their other grand finals, and I was confident in picking them in both their other grand finals. I'm not as confident, nowhere near as confident this time around.
But you're still picking them, player?
I've been with them the whole way, so I'm not jumping off the bandwagon, but I'm just saying, if you're a Geelong supporter, take in a fair bit of confidence that you can actually do it. If you play the way that you've been able to play the last couple of weeks, if Richmond allow you to play the way that you want to play, and that's the question, but I'm sticking with the Tigers. I'm sticking with them by 16 points, but I think we'll have a pretty good contest on our hands.
Now, player, you've been one of the great people that I've ever worked with, ultra professional and a lot of fun at the same time. But please, if you're going to retire tomorrow, just at least tell me that you're going to stay on Twitter.
No, that won't be happening either, Sam. So no trade radio, no Twitter, just a... get back to a little bit of normality. But the one thing you will do, find me, Sam, and you will find me at the footy next season.
Yes. Well, I hope I can shout you a beer, mate. I hope we're all back at the footy.
Oh, no, just don't jinx it, mate. Well, just touch wood somewhere.
What's going to change next year, early part of next year?
No, nothing. No, I shudder to think what the footy's going to be like. Okay, player, if we can just give you some questions without notice as we let you sail off into the sunset, and you can choose to pass on any of these questions if you like. Best teammate you play alongside?
Russell Green.
Best player you played against?
Against Gary Ablett Senior.
Best player you coached?
Really difficult question. I wouldn't like to separate Grant, Johnson, West and Richardson at Richmond.
Yeah, fair group of players. Best player you coached against is a tricky one as well.
Easy one, Wayne Carey.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. And best player you've seen since doing your job in the media?
Since the media role? So where are we talking about? Coming out fully. I'd have to say Gary Ablett Senior, but I don't have Scott Pendlebury far behind. I think Scott Pendlebury is the best player that I've seen at Collingwood through my whole journey of 43 years.
And on that plough, if Dustin Martin was to win a third Norm Smith and a third premiership at Richmond tomorrow, how far does that elevate him? Or does it not change how good a player he is in your mind? What do you think that would do to him in his career?
massively elevates him. I mean, every step of every journey of a player heading towards greatness elevates you. And yep. You know, Hodge winning a second Norm Smith certainly elevated him. I would have thought Gary Ayres, who was a great teammate of mine, where I would have sat him in terms of my Hawthorn teammates, went up tenfold because of what he did in the grand finals and winning those Norm Smith medals. So it is massive. Performing on the big stage is what it's all about. The reason I didn't put up Dustin Martin as my number one was his journey's only sort of, you know, halfway, two-thirds of the way through. So where Abbott's is the complete package.
Player, it's been a pleasure to work with you. It's been a pleasure to listen to you and watch you. I'm looking forward to sitting at home tomorrow and being able to listen to AFL Nation and your final call. Good luck, and I'm sure we'll be able to speak again in some way, shape or form.
Well, I can pick up the telephone. I mean, I'm just not working, Sam. So, all good. And Andrew, lovely to catch up with you after so long. We spent many a day at Sky Channel back in the days together. And nice to talk to you. And also, just before I finish, just to the regional listeners, because I spent a major portion when I finished up the footy. I had to really re-establish myself, and it was the regional listeners that had to put up with me over a period of time, but I really enjoyed it.
Good on you, player.
Cheers.
Terry Wallace there, finishing up after 43 years in the VFL AFL industry tomorrow for the grand final. What a career it has been. You ready to go under the microscope next, AB? Have you got your runners?
Do you want me to go now?
No. Just hold off. Okay. You're a bit keen in the barriers. You just got to wait for the doors to open.
Okay.
This is Sports Day for Wilson Holmes. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Day. It's all for Kia and Red Energy. Well, the time has come. Geez, I've promised a bit here.
Yes, you have.
I said that Andrew Bensley would not only give you the winner of the Cox Plate, which is running at 4:15 tomorrow, a few hours before the grand final, but he's also going to tell you who is going to run second, third, and fourth. It's a fascinating race this year. It is every year, but there is so many different talking points about the Cox Plate, particularly when you talk about the run-in and the lead-in for Russian Camelot versus Arcadia Queen, the internationals, and how they're going to fare. AB, what have you made of the build-up to it, and what kind of race do you think it's going to be run as?
Well, I think the build-up has been fantastic because we've got the internationals. Probably 2 or 3 months ago, Sam, we were thinking we're not going to get any of these horses to come. But
it's a big part of our spring, really.
Well, we've built into it over the years since Dermot Weld first came back in the 80s. You know, it's grown each year. So I think Aidan O'Brien, although he lost Magic Wand earlier today due to injury, I think that the quality that Aidan O'Brien has sent particularly, and Joseph O'Brien not far behind, and Roger Charlton with Aspetar. I think the quality is certainly there from an international point of view. We're talking about high-quality horses. Aidan O'Brien's horse Armory has run against some of the best horses in Europe right now. That's also been the case with Aspetar. So I think both of those horses are of world quality. Sir Dragonet, who's now joined Kiramar and David Eustace, isn't far behind. But then you look at the locals, you look at, well, I'll rate Probabil, who's owned out of New Zealand, obviously, but we've seen her race in Sydney during the spring. I think that she's beautifully drawn to get an ideal run from Barrier 2.
And so consistent.
Yeah, she has been. And I think what Kieran McAvoy showed when the horse won the Epsom at her last run in Sydney was she's got early tactical speed that will plonk her right on the pace tomorrow, and then she relaxes. I think that from a local point of view, I think that Arcadia Queen and Russian Camelot, there's not a lot between them. It could simply come down to where Russian Camelot gets to from that wide draw. What does Ollie do? You know, we've got to monitor the overnight weather. You know, I'm not going to balk at giving you some tips, but the weather could in fact play an impact if we get a lot of rain tonight. From a pace point of view, well, Grand Slam is there. The only three-year-old, much debate during the week on whether the horse deserves to be there. Kieran Maher, the co-trainer, has been very buoyant about the way the horse will run tomorrow from its draw, that it'll lead for a long way. Now that Magic Wand isn't there, there's not a lot of other horses that will go with Grand Slam now for early pace. So
you don't think there's going to be a lot of pace in the race?
I don't reckon there is.
Because that's suited, I reckon, or do you think it suited Arcadia Queen against Camel? I know it was a much smaller field, completely different race, but able to sit back and then launch in the last 400.
Yeah, I think Arcadia Queen is in a perfect or ideal spot to get that similar run.
Right.
It's what Ollie does. I'm not ruling out, like, Ollie and Russian Camelot have been able to send, you know, the only negative about Russian Camelot going forward tomorrow from the wide draw is that then he's got an issue that he can get revved up. And then it's hard to settle him. So,
what do you think Ollie will do?
I think he'll try and slot in, you know,
top six.
Yeah, no. I reckon he'll go 6 to 10 somewhere there. Okay. I reckon he'll aim there and have the sit on Arcadia Queen.
Right.
I think that's probably the way he'll ride tomorrow. I think that something will happen with. Now with Magic Wand not there, something will make a move early and get outside Grand Slam. Otherwise, that three-year-old with no weight could kick for a fair way. I think that there's been much discussion about how many run in this race. I think that Moonee Valley, as I said earlier, could have looked at running 12. There's been much discussion about whether Grand Slam deserves to be there. Does Natoya deserve to be there? And I'll be brave enough to say, off what Nick Williams said earlier about Buckhurst, you know, deserving to be in this race. I think for the 100th running of the Cox Plate, they could have just said, these are the best 12 that we've got in the race. We're going to go with that.
How many would usually run, AB?
Run 14. Yeah, they've been close to 14 the last few years. But I just think being the 100th running that we want the very best. And look, they are there. But for mine, there's five winning hopes. I think that Arcadia.
Here we go.
Yeah, not in order at this stage. I'm going to give you a tease.
Okay.
In alphabetical order, I think that Armory is there. Aspitar is there. I think Aspitar is way overs at double figure odds. I think that this horse, as we spoke earlier, I think that this horse has got quality that we'll see tomorrow run extremely well.
Will Aspitar sit back?
Aspitar will be sort of, I would say, midfield, somewhere in that sort of maybe 4 to 6, somewhere there. I think that Probabil is in the race. Russian Camelot, and I've missed out in alphabetical order because Arcadia Queen is back in the A. So yep. I think there's Arcadia Queen, Armory, Aspitar, Probabil, and Russian Camelot are the five that I've got focused to win the race. Weather could change a little bit. Mugatu would certainly like it rain if it came down overnight and it was a soft track. Buckhurst, Barrier 11, where it gets to, but I will say, as we said to Nick Williams earlier, 2,000 metres is much better for Buckhurst now after watching it last week at 2,400 metres in the Caulfield Cup.
So Dragon A, just not convinced?
Look, Kieran Ma normally does get it right. He's been quite bullish about the gallops that the horse has had at the Valley last Saturday and Tuesday. Look, it's 5th, 6th, 7th. It's somewhere there. Okay. It's not far from them. No, there's a good group of horses here. There's a good group of horses.
All right, AB, come on. You've teased us enough now. You've given us a 5. Give us the order.
Ah, gee, if only Jared Healy was here so I could... he really beats me up and gives me some confidence. Come on, Sam, you can give me a bit more than that, can't you?
Well, you've been the guy that picks all the winners in the big races since we've started following this sport. So come on.
I'm going
to
go...
We don't need to pump up the greats.
No.
The greats don't need to be pumped up.
I'm going to go with Probabil. The Epsom winner for Jamie Richards and Kieran McAvoy. Kieran's had 11 rides. He's 12th tomorrow in the Cox Plate. Hasn't quite been able to celebrate, but I think he will tomorrow with Probabil.
Mm-hmm.
From that draw with the weight of 55.5, positions beautifully, handles the sting out of the track, although I don't want it too wet, but I think Probabil wins. I think that Armory, the international quality of Aidan O'Brien and Armory, we know the horses had that issue with a vets test in the last 24, 36 hours.
Yep.
But now, having got that tick, Armory is there. Arcadia Queen, Russian Camelot, there's not a lot between those. And the other one is Aspitar. I'm certainly going to say, I'm going to have something each way on Aspetar. I think it's well over the odds at double figure odds. Damian Lane won this race last year, and it will position up in that sort of fourth, fifth, or sixth there somewhere. So they're the five, but the main three, Probabil to beat Armory, and then Arcadia Queen.
There's the only tips that you need to listen to for 4:15 tomorrow. The Cox Plate, 13 Probabil, 12 Armory, 9 Arcadia Queen, 11 Russian Camelot, and 6 and a small each way bet for Aspetar, the French horse. Andrew Bensley telling us ahead of time how the Cox Plate is going to be run. More sports day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. It's all for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Well, it's been another big week. We've saved the big interviews for grand final week here on Sports Day. Plenty of news in the footy world once again. It started with GWS star, or former star now, Jeremy Cameron, telling the Giants he wants out. We spoke to their CEO, Dave Matthews.
Oh, look, it was disappointment. I mean, we probably felt this might have been where it was heading. Particularly when you see Brian Cook, CEO Geelong, come out, which is an unusual thing to do. A couple of, I think late last week or early last week, you think, okay, that's, this campaign for a number of years might come off. But, so we probably felt that we might be disappointed. So, yeah, it is disappointing. I mean, he's a foundation player. He's an outstanding young person. And, this is the risk, I guess, when you've got a lot of talent that comes from the South. And he's been a terrific player for us. And, so disappointment, yes.
So what's the strategy now that you've freed up some space in your salary cap? And maybe it means others don't have to go. But right now I think your average punter looking at the Giants say they're now back into rebuild mode. And that's not a dramatic rebuild, but you certainly wouldn't be in premiership contention for next year.
Yeah, I think we are. I mean, I still think it's probably more restructure than rebuild. I think our list strategy has been smart, and we've generally shown a good track record of being able to retain the talent we've got. And Jeremy leaves, it provides opportunity for others, and I think it's more of a restructure. I think our list strategy is pretty sustainable. But I was listening to your introduction. It's a difficult thing for our agency. I think we're on the record of few years ago I was saying that one of the biggest risks to the expansion clubs in particular was the free agency system, and it's probably proving that way.
Dave, why do you think Jeremy's leaving GWS for Geelong?
Well, I think, and I'll let him speak to it when you guys access him at some point, but I think you'll find that he's glowing on the club. He's helped build it, so the culture is something he's contributed to. He's certainly enjoyed his time at the Giants, and I think he has nothing but good things to say about us. But he's the reasons that get explained are more about family and lifestyle, and his family's largely in the Western District of Victoria, and I think that's a factor. But as I was listening to the introduction, when if the Geelong was bottom four, I don't think he'd be going there, would he?
Dave Matthews there, who was pretty matter-of-fact. And then the Kangaroos later in the week confirmed that they would part ways with Rhys Shaw. Their chairman, Ben Buckley, joined us last night on Thursday to discuss the situation at the Kangaroos.
Yeah, it's been a challenging year, and it's been a challenging few weeks for everyone. Rhys and the club agreed today to go our separate ways. When I say that, I mean we've got a huge admiration and huge respect, and frankly we've got a great love for Rhys. He's been a very special person for our footy club over the course of the last couple of years that he's been involved. So but we respect the fact that Rhys wanted to come to this decision, and we'll be there to support him into the future.
When you look at how the club supported him as a young coach in a very unusual set of circumstances, do you think on reflection you will come to the view that maybe you let him down?
Look, I think I'd say a few things, Jared. First of all, everybody went into this season COVID period into a great unknown. Mm. I don't think anyone in football, I don't think anyone in Melbourne, I don't think anyone in Australia or frankly the world understood the challenges that we would all face going into, hubs and bubbles and periods where there were lockdowns and periods of quarantine and, travelling from one part of the country to the other. I think, everybody who went into that went into the great unknown. There's no doubt that if we had our time again or most clubs had the time again, we probably all do things differently, but, generally a great level of support around the team and around the coaching staff, and it was pretty consistent with what most other clubs did. But frankly, Jared, we always learn from these things. I mean, if we don't, then we wouldn't progress. And if we had to go back and do it again, and if we have to go back into the same sort of environment as we did this year, next year, then we would probably do things differently.
Ben Buckley there. We've had a lot of feedback in the last 24 hours for that interview. That was all for APCO. You can win a brand new ute with Team APCO Top Fan on now at APCO Service Stations. More Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. It's all for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. We are nearly done and dusted for the grand final preview edition of Sports Day. Let's hear from Damien Hardwick, Trent Cotchin, Chris Scott and Joel Selwood. The four of them spoke today, sitting alongside each other on the Gold Coast ahead of tomorrow night's grand final.
It's been an exciting year. It's obviously been difficult to predict how it was going to play out. I think even back in March, the challenge was there for everyone to see that. I think even Gil said that the teams that, were the most agile and the ones that embraced the situation were probably going to be the ones that played the longest. And, I've certainly seen that in Richmond, and I'd like to think that we've been able to approach it in that manner as well.
Sorry, Phil. Answers, wouldn't it, straight away? But I think finals have been built off the back of the fundamentals of the game for a long time, and I think this game will be no different. Strength of Geelong is around contested ball, and it's something we do reasonably well as well. And I think we've got two really good sides that are going to go at it, and whoever's system stands up the longest will obviously come away with the thing in front of us. But I think from an overall perspective, I think it's going to be a great game of footy. We're two pretty good sides that have been playing a great band of footy for a long period of time, and I'm looking forward to the challenge. They've been a yardstick along with our football club for a number of years, and I think it's about time we played off in the grand final, so I'm looking forward to it.
Sorry, could you repeat that first bit?
Would a wet, slippery night change how you play?
Oh, well, it would change the way we play against anyone, but it would be the same for the opposition as well. So I guess they've got a little bit of recent experience in slippery conditions over in Adelaide. I've given up forecasting the weather. I've made too many mistakes year after year. It's become a bit of an in-joke with our coaching team. So my experience in Queensland is it's either going to rain all night or it'll come and go really quickly. There won't be much in between. So, we'll think about it, obviously, but we're not going to get confused by trying to forecast difficult to predict weather. Yeah. No, we haven't been arrogant enough to think that we've got everyone else covered bar Richmond. It's really difficult to get to this stage in the first place, but I guess in the back of our mind it's been really clear that Richmond have been the best team, and if you're going to win a premiership, you're more than likely going to have to beat them. We're aware that our system was always going to have to stand up against them, and we've got a degree of confidence that that's the case, but the execution piece is so much harder than the planning. I think sort of working out what to do is pretty easy. Actually being able to execute it against the best in a pressurised situation is much, much harder. But as you say, they've been the benchmark. I'm sure they do have real confidence in their system. And, we're pretty aware of what they do. But I think the great teams in history have been pretty transparent. It's pretty easy to see what they do well. It's just very, very hard to stop it.
This is Danny. It's always been through this year. You're sort of a little bit amazing that you're sitting here one day after the red line.
Amazed, yes, I suppose you'd say. I think it's probably a celebration of both clubs, really. Like, to think we're up here the longest. It's been an extraordinary achievement, I think, on behalf of both our footy clubs. Look, if you had a set up here, we're going to be up here 105 days to play an AFL season, you know, that much time ago, you'd think you're crazy. But look, for the AFL to get us the season up and going, for AFL Queensland to, you know, to give us the opportunity to play, it's been an extraordinary season. And I said it many, many moons ago that, you know, the side that prepares the best and handles it best is going to be the side that comes out the best. So I think it's a great achievement for both our footy clubs. I think we're both incredibly honoured to be here. And I think it's going to be an extraordinary game come Saturday night.
Yeah, I think Damien said it well. It was very, very difficult to predict when we jumped on a plane for Sydney over 100 days ago that we were still going to be away from home in time for the grand final. So, I've been really proud of the way that our club has handled the whole situation, from hotel quarantine in Perth. Yeah. We've been aware that we're no different to other clubs. The challenge has been common, you know, across all the clubs, probably to slightly different degrees with some of the non-Victorian clubs, but a challenge nonetheless. And I think if we tried to forecast with too much intensity back then how it was going to work out, we would have ended up frustrated. So, again, I think the teams and the players and the people that have just put one step in front of the other tended to be the ones that have sort of kept everything in perspective the best.
It's a good question. We probably wouldn't have acted as quickly as what we could have, or maybe might not have had the service that we could have. But no, we got lucky, to be honest. I mean, we came back from Adelaide and we were lucky enough that there was a surgeon available to be able to do the surgery. That was an easy, tidy-up job. Pete, the question is, you know, I dream to win the premiership each year. I'm sure the same with Trent, but, you know, I dream for my team to just be up there and get to enjoy the success again. We always follow how it plays out and, you know, been in envy of what the Tigers have been able to do of the recent years. So now it's up to our guys to take it away. Say that again, Steve. Very small, and that's no disrespect to him, but it's Gaz came out at the start of the year basically and allowed everyone, the football world, to know that this is our last one, and hopefully I speak of everyone, but we've celebrated him the right way. And it would be lovely to see him up there receiving a medal at the end of the day, but I'm sure Trent's going to say different.
I like Gaz, yeah. Not that much though. Yeah, look, to be completely honest and transparent, I don't think we ever doubted our culture. It was always outside of our four walls. We're incredibly proud of what we have created and continue to create and try to grow week in, week out, year on year. We have an amazing group of people, not just players, back in our hub that I've thoroughly enjoyed being part of this year's journey with. And, you know, we're just looking forward to an opportunity tomorrow night against what's a quality outfit, and we're really excited about that. Yeah, Nathan just came down to the club, like a lot of people do at different stages throughout the year. Clearly that hasn't been possible in season 2020, but, you know, we just spent a bit of time together just about his journey, our journey, and just general chat about, you know, what life looks like, not just in your football career or rugby career, but life in general. And, you know, it's been amazing to watch from afar their journey this year. And, you know, it's always humbling when someone comes into your environment, might take one or two things away that may or may not help them, but, you know, they've been on their own journey, and it's always lovely seeing other teams celebrate what they do. And hopefully, not for Melbourne Storm's sake, but for Nathan and the team's sake, they can get the job done.
That was all for Giant Bicycles. We're still riding with you. We are looking forward to the Furphy unbelievable moments this weekend, both in the AFL and the NRL Grand Finals. Let's go Storm. Personally, I'm tipping the Cats by 10, but my Grand Final tips are usually wrong. You can introduce the new easy drinking beer from Furphy. It's called the Furphy Crisp Lager Brewed for the ultimate refreshment. It is unbelievable. That's it here for us on Sports Day. Enjoy the weekend. Stay safe. Enjoy whatever sport you're watching. And we will see you, Jared and I, back here on Monday.